Hello, and welcome to the Paxton and Whitfield Cheese Podcast. I'm Hero Hirsch, and today I'm going to be talking to a colleague of mine, Philippa Reed, who's our trade sales manager. Hi, Philippa.
Hi, Hero.
Philippa and I are in different locations today, which is why the clarity of our recording may not be as crystal clear as our standard podcasts, but hopefully our Zoom link will work and there won't be too many technical issues today. So Philippa, do you want to introduce yourself and maybe talk a little bit about what you do at Paxton's?
Yeah, of course. So I joined Paxton Whitfield back in November 2019 as the trade sales manager here. So I'm responsible for growing the business-to-business sales of Paxton Whitfield products. So of course that includes our delicious cheese, also our fine foods, as well as our recently launched range of cheese homewares and accessories. So finding new outlets for the delights that we can offer.
Fabulous. And we've actually, you and I have been discussing this podcast for quite a while.
Yeah.
Because we realised that as a relative newbie, I guess, to the company,
yeah,
you know, unique position to do an entire research project on something that's not necessarily cheese in our normal podcast way.
Yeah.
But something which would be maybe really good for somebody who's entering the company. So yeah. Do you want to tell us what we're talking about today?
Yeah, so I have been researching the history of Paxton Whitfield, and it was one of the aspects that really drew me to Paxton Whitfield as a company when I was going through the application process. Mm-hmm. The business has such an incredibly rich history. It dates back to 1742, which it's really not often you come across a company in 2020 that, you know, goes back as long as Paxton Whitfield does. So I think working for a company with such a vast history is a real privilege. And having spoken to some of our customers, that company has continued to delight generation upon generation, but also remain innovative. It's really quite impressive. And I think the history absolutely contributes to the character of the company. So yeah, I jumped at the chance when this opportunity came up to do a bit of digging and yeah, find out what I could.
Fabulous. So how do you approach a project like this? Where do you even start?
Yeah, so researching the history of Paxton Whitfield did prove to be a little tricky. Because although 93 German Street, where the current location of Paxton Whitfield currently is in St. James, it did survive the bombs of World War II. The building did suffer several fires, and the worst of which saw its records and files and other documents destroyed. So I was using some books, what I could find on the internet, speaking with a few different staff members as well to get some little anecdotal evidence. So it was a combined effort, really.
Yeah, that lost archive though must have made it a fairly tricky thing to have all of those records.
I know, it's kind of devastating, really, but it could have been a lot worse.
So I guess it probably makes sense to start us from the very beginning, if you can. Mm. So Mr. Paxton, Mr. Whitfield, take us back to the start.
Okay, well, first of all, it wasn't Mr. Paxton, Mr. Whitfield, and that's something I found really surprising, was that it was neither Mr. Paxton nor Mr. Whitfield who initially started the company. So it all started by a gentleman called Stephen Cullum in 1742, he was a cheesemonger from Suffolk who decided to chance his luck in London. He started out by leasing a shop in Clare Market. So according to Charles Dickens, he gave a rather detailed description of Clare Market in his Dictionary of London. And I just love this description. He wrote, "The market was filled with strange pieces of coarse, dark-coloured and unwholesome-looking meat. There is scarce a piece there whose form you recognise as familiar. No legs of mutton, no sirloins of beef, no chops or steak or ribs or shoulders. It is meat, and you take it on faith that it is meat of the ox or sheep. But beyond that, you can say nothing."
I
think it was rather notorious at the time, but I suppose perhaps it was, if you know, Stephen Cullum was starting out, it was an economical way of moving to London and getting established, really.
Interesting. Okay, well, it's fascinating to get some insight into what Clare Market was like. And that was in Aldwych, is that right?
Yes, yeah, indeed, okay. Yeah.
So what kind of cheeses would have been about on that first Paxton and Whitfield, well, not Paxton and Whitfield, Stephen Cullum stand?
There are actually around 40 different kinds of cheese available at this time. Cheese making had become commonplace on most farms as the smallholders kept cows to supply their villages with milk. And of course, then the surplus milk would be turned into cheese. And many of the regional variations had started to develop. So, of course, the territorials, think Red Leicester, Cheshire, Double Gloucester. And in fact, Hira, I believe you've done a podcast on these territorials.
There are some territorial podcasts available as well. Yes.
Nice little plug there. So Cheshire was the most popular cheese at this time, and it was sold throughout Britain. And in fact, by the 1750s, cheesemongers were dispatching over 2,000 tons to London alone. What I found interesting, though, is that the cheese which arrived into London didn't actually end its life there. It was then London, I guess, was acting almost in the capacity of a large wholesaler. And it was then redistributed to places like Essex, Hertfordshire, parts of Sussex and Kent. Bedfordshire, Buckinghamshire. So London really became a hub. And another thing that I found really interesting was that as London became wealthier, the demand for really decadent and indulgent food and indulgent looking food became more and more popular. And so it was known that the red rind on some of the cheese was actually due to the fact that copper or even lead was sometimes added to the cheese.
Oh wow! So to make the cheese seem more appealing, they
exactly
made it
to really, yeah,
highly toxic.
Yeah. So probably not something that we could get away with today.
And so that was cheese in sort of the 1750s or so.
Yeah.
So what was the next stage in history? Because all of the records of Paxton Whitfield are not saying 1742, it's all about this date 1797. So what's the transition there and what changes between the 1740s and 1790s?
Sure. So during the 1740s, it was very much a family business under Stephen Cullum. And as Stephen's business started to grow and London became more affluent, it was his son, Sam Cullum, who moved the cheese business closer to a wealthier customer base. So they moved from Clare Market into Swallow Street. And here he chose to sell high quality products, and he refused to handle second rate ones. So the farmers from whom he bought rich cheeses and pure butter from had to meet his very high standards. And his society customers appreciated that quality. And they appreciated the fact that he wouldn't just fob them off with, you know, say this potentially dangerous lead infested cheese. They wanted simply, you know, the absolute best. And it was as a result of the increase in footfall that Sam Cullum then took on two new partners, and can you guess who they are? Harry Paxton and Charles Whitfield, whose names now grace our shopfronts.
I see. So Paxton and Whitfield were the new business partners.
They were, yes.
Cullum, the old family, are the people that were left off the shop title.
Which I don't know if that's a bit of an injustice, really, to the Cullums, but I think it was just a testament to the fact that they were moving in a new direction, and it was a really exciting time for Paxton and Whitfield.
And so was it around that time that the business moved to Jermyn Street?
Well, by 1835, the Swallow Street shop had to close to make way for the building of what is now actually Regent Street. The business moved to number 18 Jermyn Street. And at the time, St. James was a relatively new development to the west of the City of London. What I found really interesting was that It was, I think, in 1661 that Henry Jermyn, who was the Earl of St. Albans, and he's apparently also the former ambassador to Paris and The Hague, he obtained a grant of crown land from Charles II to develop a residential neighbourhood. And it was established as a place where aristocrats and the wealthy could be close to the royal palaces. And then, of course, that attracted some really well-known names. For example, Jermyn Street became a place of residence for people such as Sir Isaac Newton, William Pitt, W.M. Thackeray, and the Duke of Marlborough. One of my favourite facts that I learned, and it's a slightly tenuous, but I'm going to include it anyway. So Lord Byron, who is the English poet, peer and politician, apparently he stayed in a hotel in Jermyn Street upon his return from Greece, and he brought 4 live tortoises whilst in London. And according to Lewis Carroll, there's nothing a tortoise likes better than cheese. So I just have this vision in my head of these tortoises scurrying along to Paxton Whitfield, which is, yeah. And I guess listeners who have been to Jermyn Street, they can identify that the street is still a very prestigious street. It almost acts as a shop window for the highest quality British craftsmanship, and the street hosts a higher number of royal warrant holders than any other street in the UK. So we are in very good company.
I mean, it certainly is an amazing place to work. Walking down Jermyn Street in the morning, and you do see all of these blue plaques of people with incredible historical significance. So it is always amazing to be among that and then have your workplace there.
It's really definitely. I felt like such a tourist when I visited Jermyn Street for the first time, because it just did seem so grand and impressive. And then just walking in and having that amazing smell of cheese just kind of hit you. It was, really exciting.
And you touched on there the royal warrants, which I think is certainly one of the elements of the history of Paxton Whitfield that a lot of people are really, really interested in. So tell me if you could just explain what a royal warrant is and how one gets one.
So a royal warrant is a document that appoints a supplier of goods or services to a royal court. And in Paxton Whitfield's case, we received our first royal warrant from Queen Victoria in 1850. And we've enjoyed royal warrants from successive monarchs since. And so today we supply both Her Majesty the Queen and also His Royal Highness the Prince of Wales with our cheese.
And so the two royal warrants, they're obviously to the current monarch. Do you inherit the title of royal warrant holder from the previous monarch? How does that work?
No, and if anything, I think that's what makes it so impressive that we have held royal warrants since 1850. There is quite a stringent application process. I think it's every 5 years. So we need to meet a set criteria and ensure that we are supplying the very best. And to say that we've done that for such an incredibly long amount of time, it's just super prestigious.
And I guess the royal family is probably the most famous clientele of Paxton and Whitfield. And very interesting to hear as well that Lord Byron was also among them. I understand you've done some research on who else has celebrity clientele have been over the years. So,
yes. So Churchill once said that a gentleman buys his hats at Locks, his shoes at Lobbs, his shirts at Harvey and Hudson, his suits at Huntsman, and his cheese at Paxton and Whitfield. And in fact, I think his favourite cheeses were Stilton and Gruyere.
I never heard that those were his favourite cheeses.
It's obviously something we still sell today. It just shows that we were in good company, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
I also found out that during World War II, a gentleman called Alistair Crowley lived above Paxton Whitfield.
Alistair Crowley. So,
yes.
Not very well known in cheese circles, necessarily.
No, I suppose not. No, he was an English occultist, a ceremonial magician and poet who founded the religion of Thelma. So yeah, I guess what better place to live above than a tea shop? If he was hungry, he could just kind of pop down and get some snacks. And
yeah, interesting. Yeah. And fascinating to consider what kind of satanic practices were happening up there.
Yes, yeah, the mind wanders. But we also apparently welcomed Charles de Gaulle during the war years. The war was a really interesting aspect of the history of Paxton Whitfield. Mm-hmm. I've read that pre-war, Paxton Whitfield, during an average year, sold 2,000 Stilton on average. And I think actually Paxton Whitfield, one of the first businesses to bring Stilton to London. Oh. But by 1951, due to the impact of the war and rationing and the lack of men on the land farming, apparently only 5 cheeses were in stock, so much so, mm-hmm. it had such an impact on Paxton Whitfield that during the war years, German Street actually just became an ordinary grocery shop in order to adapt. Right. So they sold things like eggs and butter and bacon, which again, I guess the fact that the company has been around for so long and they've had to innovate and adapt just shows...
Or how pivot, as it's currently being called.
Pivot. Okay. So yeah, that I found that really interesting. But then following the Second World War, the firm reconnected with their contacts with the traditional British cheesemakers, and then thankfully once more were able to offer the best of British cheese.
So rationing ended in 1952. So what was the next period of time like for Paxton Whitfield between the end of rationing, when it was a grocery store, and where it is currently today? Who's been running it and owning it, and what's been the transition?
Yeah, so since the Cullums, Paxton Whitfield has more often than not remained a family business. So you had father and son duo, Fred and Archie Moore. You also had Dermot and Ewan Adamson previously owning the business. And today, our current owner, it's very much a family operation. And that's something, when I joined Paxton Whitfield in November, it was just before the Christmas rush. And it was really heartening to hear stories of customers who told us that they've been buying their cheese from Paxton Whitfield ever since they accompanied their grandfather to the shop in German Street, and that they were then going to pass that tradition on to their children. And I think that's what really appeals to customers, is that we maintain our values. You know, like I mentioned, back in the 1700s, it was very important to Sam Cullum. But yet we've always been able to innovate and adapt.
And so at some point since the 1950s, Paxton Whitfield's obviously changed from being a single shop in historic German Street, St. James, to what it is now. So why do you want to just sort of expand a bit on how the company's structured now?
Yeah, of course. So I'm speaking to you from our head office in Boughton-on-the-Water in the Cotswolds, and that's where we fulfill trade orders, but also where our website orders are dispatched from. And actually Paxton Whitfield were one of the first cheese companies that actually had a website. So again, that really ties into how we try to innovate. But yes, so we've since grown to having 4 physical shops. So I think it was in 2014 that the second London shop popped up in Cale Street in Chelsea. And then we have our Stratford-upon-Avon shop and our Bath shop in John Street.
Well, I found this incredibly interesting. Thank you so much for taking the time to share all this fascinating research with us.
Thanks for having me.
How did you find researching the project? Was it?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was a really fun project to just find out a little bit more, and just having just some of those descriptions about Clare Market. You can almost see those sights and almost smell those I'm sure lovely smells back in the 1700s. And again, it's just so remarkable how far the company's come. And yeah, it's a real privilege to be a part of it. So
I suspect if you told Stephen Cullum that 250 years later we would be sat in different ends of the country,
yeah, I know,
video conferencing for a podcast about him, he probably would have passed out.
Yeah, which is that's such a lovely way to look at it. So yeah, I guess it's all thanks to the Cullums really that we're here today.
Yeah. So thank you all for listening. If you're interested in finding out more about the history of Paxton Whitfield, do drop into our shop, specifically the one in German Street, which we've been in the longest. So we've been in that particular site since 1896, and we would love to welcome you to the shop and share a bit more about our history. Also, do feel free to visit our website where there is more information and some old photos that we've managed to dig out in the research as well, which we'll be posting soon. So thank you, Pip, again.
Thank you. Thanks, Hero.
And thank you very much for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye.